Welcome back to the 76 Capital Leadership Series. I'm your producer, James Santor, and on today's show, we have Alejandro Bedoya, who is the newest member of the 76 Capital family. Ale is the co-chairman of the 76 Capital Athlete Venture Group with Eagles legend Brian Westbrook, and he has an amazing story and an amazing career as a soccer player and also as an activist and as a family man. So hear the show, hear all about what Ale is going to be doing with us in the future as the co-chairman of the Athlete Venture Group. Enjoy the show.
RushOrderTees.com has been Philadelphia's number one customer apparel company since 2002. Whether you need one or 1,000 shirts, RushOrderTees can handle any order on any deadline. Start designing online today in their online design studio or give them a call at 1-800-620-1233. That's RushOrderTees.com, Philadelphia's home for custom apparel. Welcome to the 76 Capital Leadership Series. My name is Wayne Kimmel, and I'm your host and managing partner of 76 Capital. And on this show, as you know, I interview top sports entrepreneurs, athletes, executives, who are truly changing and shaping the sports industry. And I want to just give a quick shout out to our producer back at the station, James, doing a great job, always pushing all the right buttons and doing everything to make this show work. Follow James at James Santor. He's a great follow. And you can also follow me at Wayne Kimmel across all the social media networks. And if you are an entrepreneur and you are truly trying to do the next thing in the sports industry, reach out to us at 76 Capital across all the same social media networks, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram. Great way for you to get in touch and learn about all the things that we do. And of course, subscribe to our podcast on our 76 Capital Leadership Series. And you know, you can also find our podcast on IGTV and YouTube. And let's get right to it today. I mean, we have an amazing guest. We have Ale Bedoya. I'm really excited to bring you onto the show, Ale. I mean, you are the captain of the Philadelphia Union. You're now also the new co-chairman of our 76 Capital Athlete Venture Group, working with Brian Westbrook, the chair, and Chad Stender, my partner. Really excited to have you on our 76 Capital Leadership Series. Ale, welcome to our 76 Capital Leadership Series.
Thank you, Wayne. Thanks for having me. You know, I'm excited to work together with you and everybody at the 76 Capital, and I'm really looking forward to what the future has to bring.
Well, we're excited to have you and excited to have you as, you know, and talk with you on our show, which is something that, you know, we're really excited about what we've been able to do. I mean, we've now done close to 60 different interviews with entrepreneurs and athletes and executives within the sports world and talking to them about not only just what they're doing today, but their background and how they got to where they are today. So I'd love to do that with you as well and really learn from, you know, from you, like, where did you grow up and what did you do as a kid and what kind of brought you to where you are today?
Yeah, a little bit about my background. My parents are from Colombia. Both my parents, you know, they moved here to the States when my father was about 19 years old. He came over actually on a scholarship for soccer. And then my mom followed suit soon thereafter. And they actually settled in New Jersey. That's where I was born, in Englewood, North Jersey, you know, pretty much just across the bridge, George Washington from New York City. So I lived there until I was about 9 years old. And due to my father's work, you know, he traveled often to Latin America, you know, Central America, South America. Obviously, it made more sense to travel out of Miami than up in New York. So we moved down there. And then I pretty much grew up, was raised down in South Florida, outside of Fort Lauderdale. And, you know, I think that's a lot of my roots. You know, my friends give me a lot of stick for, you know, when my hometown appears in a TV broadcast, it always fluctuates between, you know, Englewood, New Jersey or Western Florida. And, you know, they're like, you got to pick one or the other. But I like that I represent both North Jersey and South Florida. You know, I hold them dear to me. And I grew up pretty much playing all kinds of sports. You know, I was involved in tennis and baseball and soccer, obviously, specifically, and basketball. And, you know, I think all those sports helped me to become the player and the person that I am today.
That's amazing. I mean, to have, you know, you said your mom and dad, you know, both played soccer. I mean, what was it like, you know, your dad as a professional soccer player and being a kid, you know, being able to kind of watch your dad as a pro? Must have been amazing.
Yeah, it was great. You know, I can remember those days in North Jersey. I mean, those who are familiar with the soccer scene up there, you know, my father would be representing like the Brooklyn Italians or, you know, the Greeks, you know, I played for all these sectors, the Colombians, you know, and then after the games, you know, I remember there'd always be like a little parties at like diners, the local diners or restaurants. And then I remember being a little kid and going playing with the other young kids there as well. And just, you know, kind of grubbing out, you know, eating, you know, the barbecue food and the amazing food. And, you know, obviously the parents would have adult beverages, but it, you know, for me, I got to look early, you know, kind of like the traveling that was done as a professional or as an athlete and, you know, the opportunities those presented and kind of the ability to, you know, meet new people or, you know, go to different cities, different places and see new things. So, you know, I kind of enjoyed that part of it.
That's really cool. I mean, and then, you know, how did you, you know, decide? I mean, I believe right now, you know, for the Philadelphia Union, I believe you're a midfielder. Is that right?
Correct. Yes. Midfielder.
Now, did you always play midfielder or were you, you know, where did you sort of grow up and playing what?
Yeah. For the most part, throughout my career, I've always played as a midfielder. I've been a pretty versatile player. So that's why I just specifically say midfielder, just because, you know, I can play on the right side. I can play on the left, down the middle. I also played some, you know, like right back, defender, right wing, whatever you want to call it. And sometimes throughout even my professional career, I played like what they call like a false striker, false number nine, like, you know, which is like the player that plays just behind the striker. And, you know, with my ability to make runs and off the ball movement and things like that. Obviously, when you're younger and you're kind of one of the better players, you know, you kind of just, you're like the offensive player, you know, just a free roll, go wherever, try to find the ball, get the ball to find you and make things happen. That was kind of how I was in college and stuff like that. So, but, you know, I've always, you know, it's just my passion, you know, I love to play, make things happen. I consider myself, well, I guess like an honest player, you know, a guy that's willing to do all the dirty work, you know, defensively as well as offensively. And, you know, that's allowed me to have the career that I've had so far.
That's amazing. And I have to ask, I mean, did you ever in your career think about playing goalie?
Did I ever in my career? No, not seriously. You know, there'd be times in training where you joke around, like, give me the gloves, I'll hop in goal and then for fun. But never. No, I think it's too boring to play goalie.
I don't know if it was too boring, if it was a different kind of mindset you need to have to be able to go back there. Because, I mean, today's goalies, I mean, they're putting their face in there. I mean, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I always joke with them. I always give them a hard time because I think with the goalies, like you say, different mindset. They're characters, you know. They're different personalities. You got to be.
That's great. So after, you know, you said after growing up in New Jersey and then also as well as, you know, growing up down in the Florida area, you went off to college. Was it a college scholarship or did you walk on or how did that work?
Yeah, initially I got a scholarship. I actually, you know, kind of long story short, my father was initially came to the States because he had a scholarship to Boston College, but that ended up not happening. And he ended up getting picked up by Fairleigh Dickinson. And then how it worked out with me is, you know, I played on a great club team, you know, in Weston. We were a great club team, you know, went to nationals, had some great players, but I never got a real kind of 100% full scholarship to one of the big schools that I wanted to go to. Like my dream school was UNC, like to become a Tar Heel. To play in the ACC, one of those schools. I never got that offer. I got like, you know, half scholarship and things like that. So Fairleigh Dickinson actually was one of the schools, I guess, based on the relationship with my father, that offered me a full ride. And, you know, kind of, you know, they were committed to have me come in, play as a freshman. So I playing time was important for me. I wanted to make sure that I had the chance to play because there were some schools that would even tell me that, you know, I don't see you playing as a freshman. I'm like, how can you tell me that when you haven't even seen me play or I haven't even stepped on campus, you know, you don't know my true ability. So, you know, I went there to Fairleigh Dickinson for a year, did extremely well. And then I ended up actually Boston College because we had faced them that year and I scored like two goals on them. They're like, all right, would you be willing to transfer to BC? And I'm like, oh, now you want me. All right. So I made the switch to Boston College. You know, for my mom, education was always important. So BC is obviously a great school from an academic standpoint. And obviously being in the ACC, I knew that that was where I wanted to be competitively, just because they had the best teams and players in the country. So, you know, I made the switch to BC and I loved my time there, you know, from a school, you know, academic standpoint, and then from a playing standpoint, you know, I was able to get offensive ACC player of the year there my first year at BC, and we were the number one ranked team there. So it was just a great time. And, you know, it's funny because in European soccer, in European football, you know, you don't really have universities. You know, you go, you turn pro from an early age. You know, they have academies. Obviously, that landscape has been changed here in the States now. But at that time, college was still kind of a good route to go. And for me, it definitely helped me become a professional.
Well, we're really excited to have you, Ali, on our 76 Capital Leadership Series. And you can follow Ali at Ali Bedoya 17 on Twitter. So make sure you follow him. Great follow. And as we, you know, as we're talking about your college career, you ended up in the ACC. Did you knock around UNC a little bit while you were?
Oh yeah, definitely. The funny thing is, from all the schools, you know, that I guess didn't offer me a full ride, that first year when I went, I scored on every single one of those schools. So it was kind of, you know, like a little revenge, and I was up for it, and it was good. But I definitely performed against all those schools that I, you know, I had in the back of my head. I remember them. And there were schools, you know, that when I was younger, you know, I was kind of still short, you know, skinny guy. And, you know, a lot of times I think some of those colleges, when they were scouting me, those were the scouting reports, you know, that physically I was challenged because of my height and because they didn't see the strength of me. But we all know that doesn't matter. In soccer, at least. Brian Westbrook would say something different.
Right. We'll get to Brian and some of the things that he's done. But yeah, you're totally right. I mean, but again, he talks about speed and being able to, you know, and just also the idea of being able to just get back up no matter what, right? That's a huge thing. So you're in college, you're performing at the highest of levels in the ACC. And so was it always your dream to go from there and go pro, whether that was in the US or in Europe? What was kind of, what were you thinking at the time?
Yeah, it's funny. I mentioned earlier, my mother was very keen on, you know, the academic side of things. And I would say I would be, like I said, in Europe, you know, you're kind of going to academies, and at 16, 17, kids are pretty much finding out if they're going to go pro or not at that age. And for me at that age, I mean, I was seeing who my next day was at the homecoming or the prom. You know, I wasn't really thinking about going pro. It was, so I would say I consider myself a late bloomer, I guess, because it wasn't until, I guess, my sophomore year in college. You know, obviously my freshman year in college, I did really well. I was all American and all that. But until I got to be a part of like the Olympic training camps, you know, at the under 23s, that's when it started to tick that, you know, I started getting European clubs interested in my ability and opportunities to play overseas. And that's when it started to click, like I can really make it happen. I can really turn pro and make a career. And so, with that came, you know, I had the chance to leave early my junior year at BC to a club in Portugal, Sporting Lisbon, which is a really good club. But my mom, you know, she held me down, you know, and she said, you better get that degree. And so I stuck around, stayed in school. I got my degree, you know, I took some extra classes in each semester and stayed over in the summer and graduated early in December. And then I was able to go to Sweden and take that first step to turn professional in January.
So did you play on the U.S. national team before going to Europe or at the same time, or how did that work?
Yeah, I was in a mix with the under 20s. I went into some camps with the youth national teams, and then with the under 23s, which is the kind of the Olympic team. You know, I was a part of some camps there. And so there I'm dealing with, you know, some of the players there were already professionals, you know. So it was a mix of guys who were in college and also guys who were already professionals. So, yeah, once you're in that mix, for me, then it was like, you know, that's kind of a reflection of your ability, and it kind of, you know, gives you that sense that, like, you know, you can hack it here, then you know you're a professional pretty much. You have a chance. So that's when the light kind of switch turned in my head, you know, obviously that, you know, I gotta do well in school, but also that, you know, I have the talent and the skill to go professional and to get prepared for that.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, you know, from a U.S. national team perspective, you know, my partner Chad, who you know very well, right? He was telling me, he's like, do you realize that Ali played 66 times for the national team? And I mean, like, he's like, that's unbelievable. Like, you have to. And so what was that experience like? Like playing for the U.S. national team, wearing the, you know, the flag on your chest. I mean, like, what did it feel like being out there? And
oh man, it's surreal. You know, I think, like I said, you, as a kid, you always dream. You always watch those games, you know, the European games. In my house, we watch a lot of the South American leagues too. But of playing in a World Cup, like that's the pinnacle, I feel like, of any soccer player's career, is to be able to represent your country on the biggest international stage in the world. And as you know, here in the States, you know, I guess we see like the Super Bowl as the big spectacle and, you know, this and that. But when you really look at the numbers and data and everything, you see it, the World Cup dwarfs like every sport, any sporting event, right? So I think it's just surreal. You know, actually the 2010 World Cup that was in South Africa, I was called into camp for that one. Unfortunately, I didn't make the final roster. I was an alternate there. But that just like you mentioned earlier, it didn't really knock me down, but it made me realize that, you know, I'm so close. I need to work harder. You know, I can do it. And then I had that chance in 2014 to represent the U.S. at the World Cup in Brazil. And, you know, in the soccer world, Brazil has always been like kind of like the golden team, right? The best players, and the way that they play the game is so amazing to watch. So to have the world, be able to play in that World Cup in Brazil and just see the kind of all the eyes and kind of the pressure and the environment and everything surrounding it was just amazing, you know. And I just recall walking out in the tunnel. I couldn't even see the field just because all the cameras and the journalists that were in your face and the flashes going off before, you know, going out on the field. And you hear the vuvuzelas, it's deafening, the noise. And then you think about, like, you know, all the eyes that are watching you from all over the world. It's just something that it's hard to explain. And then, you know, obviously as an athlete, you kind of zone out, right? You once you enter the field, you're just so focused on the game. And I just remember Clint Dempsey scoring that first goal against Ghana in the opening, you know, in the first 5 minutes or whatever it was early goal. And it was just a euphoric feeling. You know, I literally saw the goal go in. Like, I wish I was a little bit quicker so I could tap it in. It could have been my goal, but it's just a feeling that's inexplainable. You know, it's just something I've dreamt my whole life, and it's surreal. Like I said, it's just to be able to put on that shirt, you know, the USA flag, you know, hear the national anthem being played, and just, you know that you're out there as one of the best players in a country of, you know, well over 300 million people. It's incredible.
Must have been incredible. And you know, you mentioned, you know, Dempsey. I mean, who are some of the other guys that you played with that you, you know, maybe were there some of the guys that you kind of were looked up to when you were younger, or were there some guys that you competed against and now have relationships with? I mean, have you really kept
yeah,
up?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, obviously, growing up, Landon Donovan was a marquee figure in all of U.S. soccer. You know, and he was a kid, you know, that made it as a pro very early in his career. And, you know, he became the poster child for U.S. soccer. So, like, my first camp with, like, the full team, I'll never forget, it was in Holland against Amsterdam. In Amsterdam against Holland, the Netherlands. And that was the first time I got to meet guys like, you know, Landon Donovan, Clint Dempsey, you know, Tim Howard, DeMarcus Beasley, all these guys. And, you know, it's a little bit nerve-wracking, you know, but at the same time, they were great to me, you know. You know, they were willing to put their arms over my shoulders and, you know, kind of direct me in certain ways and, you know, kind of make the pressure less than it really was. And I think, obviously, we're playing the Netherlands. Also, for me, that was another team that, growing up, you know, they have some world-class players playing in some of the biggest teams in the world. So for me to step in that field in that stadium was just an amazing feeling as well. And another reassurance that I belonged, but also just remarkable that I had made it that far, you know, just like a normal kid from Jersey, from South Florida, you know, playing on this stage with these guys. And To be able to play, like I said, with those names, Carlos Bocanegra, Steve Cherundolo, Landon Donovan, Tim Howard, DeMarcus Beasley, Clint Dempsey, all these guys that I've been looking up to for so long. And Dempsey is still to this day one of the guys that I stay in touch with often.
Oh, that's amazing. That's really amazing. Well, I could sort of talk to you about the U.S. national team for hours here, but we got to cover a couple other things. But talk about your career in Europe, which was pretty amazing. I mean, you played. My understanding, you played in Sweden and Scotland and France, and you played for some pretty epic teams as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when I first, like I said, I had this opportunity to leave early from Boston College. I didn't take that opportunity, but I had another player who's a really good friend of mine now, one of my best friends, Charlie Davies, who you might have heard of. He had a great talent. He went to BC before I did, and he turned pro and went to Sweden. And one of the summers in my junior year, I was able to go to Sweden, train with a team out there, and had some days off. I visited him in Stockholm, and that's when I fell in love with the city of Stockholm, the country of Sweden, and I felt that was the right step for my career. Just like it was where I didn't kind of go to one of the bigger schools initially, and I went to a smaller school, Fairleigh Dickinson, and made a name for myself there. I felt that was a logical step for me. Go to Sweden, establish myself, get playing time that I so needed. And, I didn't want to ride the bench or anything like that. And then, scouts would see and my ability and things like that. I believed in myself. And that's what happened. And I was able to make the move to Glasgow Rangers after that. And Glasgow Rangers is a very storied club, great tradition, great history. Unfortunately, I didn't go at the best time as they went into administration, which is, the equivalent of bankruptcy here in the States. But my time there was amazing. I spent it with a couple other national team guys in Maurice Adu and Carlos Bocanegra. And, the fan base there is crazy. I mean, Chad could probably talk to you, they have a rivalry. It's called the Old Firm Derby. And it's just more than a soccer rivalry. It goes into politics and religion, So there's so much at stake there, and the fans are absolutely, as they say, mental. It's just crazy, but they're passionate, man. They're passionate, and it's awesome. And then from there, I moved back actually to Sweden, to Helsingborg. It was a team that, obviously I knew the Swedish league very well. I felt that if I could take a little step back to go forward again in my career, that would be good. And, I did very well at Helsingborg, played in Champions League, Europa League. We were, at the time I left, we were the top team in the league there. My next step took me to France, to FC Nantes. And that was a great point in my career. I played there almost 4 years, against some of the best teams in the world, the PSG, Olympique Marseille and Olympique Lyon. And some great, great players, which I'm sure you recognize, at PSG, some guys like Zlatan Ibrahimovic, things like that. Mbappe, who's now there. When I was there, he was actually from at Monaco. But that was just awesome. And I think what gets lost a lot in this is obviously for soccer, it was amazing for my professional career. But I think soccer has enabled me to travel the world like no other. And I've been blessed to be able to go to so many countries and see so many different cultures, try so many different like cuisines and, meeting people. And, I think for me, it's made me the player that I am, obviously, but also the person that I am.
Planning your next corporate event or need branding apparel for your business? RushOrderTees.com is Philadelphia's home for custom apparel. RushOrderTees can handle any order on any deadline. Give them a call today at 1-800-620-1233 or start designing online in their state-of-the-art design studio at rushordertees.com.
Yeah, I mean, it's really amazing, all the different, all the different countries you've lived in, as you said, cultures. But then what made you come back to the U.S. and the MLS? What kind of, brought you back here? Was it an agent of yours, or was it the MLS itself, or was it something that you wanted to do, or kind of how did that all come to
be? Yeah, it was a bit hesitant to come back. I had some chances to go elsewhere. I had a couple of teams from England and even Germany interested, but the way the transfer window worked, MLS closed like August 4th, and the rest of the Europe, the window closed in the end of August, August 30th. So I was kind of in a tough situation where, like, you know, if I have this MLS situation go by, and something doesn't pan out wherever, you know, in England or Germany, then I'm stuck in, you know, not that it was a bad thing to be stuck in France, but, you know, I wanted to take another step, another challenge. And then it was also the birth of my child, Santino, my son, who was born in France. With his birth, you know, as a father, you know, I kind of, my thinking kind of shifted. You know, I kind of wanted to be closer to home as well with my family, have my son grow up and be part of my family, you know. And obviously being in Europe, it was hard for them to get over all the time and be there and show their support. But being closer to my family in the States enabled me to have, you know, some help, you know, with my son. And it was, you know, I thought about it from a family perspective, you know. So I think it was about the time that I was ready to come home, you know, and Philadelphia presented a great opportunity, and they had some ambitious plans, you know, and they saw kind of, I was still the prime of my career. And, you know, I think they saw the possibility of me kind of leading the team, you know, forward. And, you know, here we are. I think things have gone pretty well. You know, we won the Supporters Shield last year. First trophy in club history, and throughout my time here so far, we've been able to continue to make history with getting, you know, the first playoff victory in history, and, you know, breaking records with points total in the season and all that and stuff. So, you know, I think it was just the right time in terms of, you know, I had spent almost 10 years in Europe, and, you know, I was just trying to be closer to home and spend more time with family.
Absolutely. I mean, so you said, you know, so how old is your son now?
My son is 6 now, and I also have a daughter now who's 3 years old. So they're the driving force.
And I understand also your wife was also a professional soccer player as well.
She did. She played soccer growing up. Yeah, back in Norway, in Bergen, where she's from. So, you know, I hope that my kids will have some athletic genes as well.
And do you go out there and sort of kick the ball around with them, or?
Yeah, definitely. I, you know, in the city, it's a little bit harder to do maybe than living out in the suburbs in Philly. But I think we have a nice little private driveway where we, you know, we get, you know, you have like a bucket full of all this athletic stuff, you know, bats and balls and, you know, tennis balls, rackets and soccer balls out there on the street. So they enjoy that.
That's awesome. That's great. You know, again, it's really a pleasure to have you on our 76 Capital Leadership Series. You know, we have Ali Bedoya. Follow him at Ali Bedoya 17 on Twitter. And, you know, one of the things I really wanted to get into prior to talking about the fact that, I mean, as we said earlier, you know, Ali, you're the captain of the Philadelphia Union. You've had some really great success on the field, you know, here in the U.S., in Europe, on the U.S. national team. Now coming on as our co-chairman of our athlete venture group. But at the same time, you have really gotten yourself kind of in the middle of some really important, you know, philanthropic as well as social justice initiatives. You know, why do you do those things? Is it something inside? Is it something from you when you grew up? Or is it just something that you just said, you know, I gotta do something about this?
I think it was a little bit of both of everything, right? You know, how I was raised and how I grew up. But over the my career, I think, you know, like I said, I've been able to travel so many different places. But I always made it a habit of myself to, whenever I went somewhere to a new country, that I try to acclimate myself. I try to, you know, learn the language where I'm at and you know, kind of get out of my comfort zone, right? Because I think, you know, when you make yourself vulnerable, vulnerability is not a weakness. I think that's the biggest strength you can have is to become vulnerable and really see something else for what it's not. And when you go out of your comfort zone, you really learn a lot about yourself. So when I'm seeing different things and I think going to Europe really opened my eyes and gave me a whole new perspective on the world, you know, the way people live and things like that. So when I, you know, overseas, I think one of the social justice initiatives, obviously, that I've been a part of recently is obviously the gun violence, right? You might be familiar with that viral moment after I scored a goal, you know, whatever came hit my head that weekend, you know, that was the El Paso shooting and also Dayton shooting on a Saturday and a Sunday. And so that was all that was on my mind. And it was just a spontaneous moment. I grabbed the mic and, you know, I shouted to Congress to let's, you know, try to end gun violence. And you know, I grew up in Weston and the town over from me is Parkland, and there was a Parkland shooting, and that hit, I mean, that hit real close to home. You know, I had a teammate here in Philly who lost his best friend in that shooting. So all these things, they're all encompassing, right? And they have an impact on you. And, you know, I think it was Nelson Mandela who had a quote, you know, sports have the power to change the world. And they really do. You know, sports bring people together from all over. And through sports, as an athlete, I feel like it's just not enough to just play a sport. And you know, it's not a responsibility, I don't feel like, but I feel like I'm responsible and I have an obligation to make an impact in my community, in the city that I'm playing for. You know, now I've been in Philly almost 5 years. So I feel like I'm a Philadelphia man at heart now, you know, like I want to be able to help the people around me and help my city, you know, the city and the communities and things like that. So it's just something that I guess comes to me naturally, you know, that I want to leave behind a legacy that's not just a midfielder, you know, a player, a soccer player, you know, it's one that includes somebody that was able to make an impact on in their community, you know, in the children, in the future generations, you know, whether it's, you know, making a difference with gun violence or making a difference in the business world, you know, with 76 Capital and investing in different entrepreneurs or in businesses. So I think that's just something that for me, it's just innate, you know, and I have no problem doing that. And it's something that I'm passionate about. And I think it's important.
Yeah, it certainly is, and it's certainly something that is really important to us at 76 Capital. And I think that, you know, one of the things I'm wondering is when you do this and you do these off the field type of initiatives and use your social capital to, you know, try to make this world a better place. Can you see other players, whether it's on your team or other teammates or team members, that kind of say, well, wait a second, you know what, if Ollie's doing this, I can do this. And like, maybe I should get behind this. Or maybe, you know, have you seen others kind of been able to kind of get behind you because you've been the one who's kind of stepped out or grabbed the mic and said, hey, this is an important issue?
I think definitely when you do acts like that and things like that, I think you empower, you know, your locker room. You know, you talk about creating a culture, whether it's in a company or here as a team. You know, when you're in that locker room, you have guys from, you know, I think there's 14 different nations represented here in our team, and there's a lot of youth. And so when you bring all that diversity, right, and you do something like that, it really empowers the whole locker room, right, to feel like they – you know, like they can stand up for what they believe in, and they have the freedom to, you know, express themselves, and they become more comfortable right within the locker room, because a lot of guys maybe are shy or maybe don't feel like they can express themselves a certain way. But I would say that in the past, you know, we have some great athletes, some great leaders, some great people in my locker room. You know, and last year I can speak for, you know, guys like Ray Gaddis, Warren Craval, Mark McKenzie. These are guys who are out there, you know, putting themselves out, you know, becoming vulnerable and kind of trying to make a difference in their communities here, whether it's in Chester. You know, our stadium's out here in Chester, in the Chester community, but also in Philly. And I think that speaks volumes about their character and what they're all about as people. And I think, you know, it's not for everybody, and that's okay. I understand that. But I think for those who maybe are a little bit shy or more quiet, I think definitely it helps to have people like myself and those guys to help break the mold of maybe, you know, being hesitant or being shy, you know?
Well, it's certainly something that we've noticed, and it's a leadership trait that, you know, is really important, truly just to make this world a better place. And that's not just a little thing, obviously. I mean, it was one of the reasons why I understand that, you know, the MLS and Don Garber thought it would be great for you to be part of the Athletes' Voices at Harvard with Joanne Pasternak. And, you know, luckily I'm also a member of that group as well with you in that. And, you know, really excited about this idea of being able to empower and help this next generation of athletes and help them go out there and use their voice to make change and make this world a better place. So hopefully this summer, you know, things, you know, get better and we can actually be on campus at Harvard together up in Boston. That would be really special.
That would be great. Yeah, Joanne's a great person. And, you know, some of the athletes that I've been able to interact through her and everything, it's amazing. You know, like I said, sports, you know, we speak a language that connects with people, you know, from certain community, that is able to have a lasting impact. And I think the more social capital that athletes realize that they have and continue to use as leverage, I think the more impact we can have as we're able to connect with a more diverse group of people.
Well, Ollie, you know, it's been really great to have you on our show. And, you know, what obviously today we really wanted to talk about the fact that, you know, you are now coming on board of our 76 Capital Athlete Venture Group as the co-chairman, along with the chairman, Brian Westbrook, from the Philadelphia Eagles. And you're with the Philadelphia Union. And it's just really exciting that to have you in that. And what attracted you, you know, other than, of course, you know, my partner, Chad Stender, who really understands this game of soccer, and who is someone who is super passionate about the overall, you know, game and the culture, and is someone that really enjoys, he's been telling me about the relationship that you guys have built. But what was overall, from an athlete venture group perspective, you know, attracted you to be wanting to be a part of this, and not only being a part of it, but also being one of the leaders?
Yeah, definitely. I think just as we spoke to earlier with the social justice initiative, you know, I wanted to work with the right kind of people that are, you know, building companies that could make a big impact on the world, or connecting with guys like Brian Westbrook and Chad Stender, who are you know, kind of both love sports, are in the sports world, and also, you know, business minded. So when I first met Chad, we connected on, you know, on various levels, but I think he saw where, you know, that kind of our visions kind of align, right? And, you know, continue to work with Chad and now with Brian at the ABG and Athlete Venture Group, you know, is going to be tremendous. I think obviously our main goal now is to grow it out, to obviously help 76 Capital continue to grow its portfolio companies as well. But it's continuing that trend of making an impact, making a difference, right? So I would consider that all the prospects for ABG that we consider, you know, you want to get involved, you know, get involved in as to the level that you're comfortable with. You know, I think we're going to be focusing on, together with our investment team, you know, yourself, Wayne, Chad, John, James, also everybody at 76 Capital, to, you know, screen potential investments, you know, doing proper due diligence with them. And ultimately, if you invest, that's fine, you know, but I think you're going to be able to help companies grow, but you're going to be able to help your brand grow as an athlete, you know, as we leverage our, you know, our athlete name, you know, throughout our careers. You know, I think the career as an NFL player is a lot shorter than the average, you know, soccer player, because as a soccer player, it's a worldwide game. There's many, many more options for you. But it's important that as athletes, as we become more knowledgeable, as we continue to use our social capital, which is very important, and then we have the financial means too to invest, that we do it in a good, smart way. And the AVG, together with, you know, Chad and Brian Westbrook, I think we all have a keen understanding of, you know, a sense of business, you know, a good business acumen, that will be able to help other prospective athletes. And it's not just athletes. I think Athlete Venture Group is the name we went with, but athletes as ourselves, we, you know, we're influencers, we're celebrities. So that goes for other influencers and celebrities as well that would be willing to join us. And, you know, I think with the connections that we made, I'm a big guy on relationships. I think in all aspects of life, networking is big. I've never been a guy that's been shy, you know. Even that's how I met Chad, is when I first moved to Philly, you know, I wanted to find a company that, you know, that was willing to invest in entrepreneurs and things like that. And I found you guys, and I just reached out to Chad, you know, hey, and we ended up linking up at Nerd Street Gamers at an event that you guys hosted out there with one of your portfolio companies. So you hit it off, and, you know, next thing you know is you realize that there's people out there that are willing to be mentors for you, right? They're willing to offer you advice, guys like yourself, Wayne, and things like that. And you lean on that, right? And with the Athlete Venture Group, I think that's another thing that we're going to be open to is guys to be a part of the group that will be able to make introductions to other executives, you know, whether it's helping to create marketing content or showing up to support like I did, you know, showing up at an event like, you know, Nurtury Gamers and, you know, esports and, you know, it was one of the FIFA event, you know, so I was able to play there and get to meet others. So the Athlete Venture Group, I think, is going to be able to offer so much to a lot of people. And, you know, on the side also for athletes is being able to get some, you know, interview and speaking opportunities at different events that can further that specific person's brand, you know, that makes them more than just an athlete, you know, that makes them more of a, you know, I think Brian Westbrook is pretty much considered, you know, a former Eagles player and now a businessman, right? And I think that's important for a lot of us now as we, you know, mature and in our careers.
Well, you know, one of the things which I think is really amazing where, and one of the things we've seen with guys like Brian Westbrook, and when we're able to introduce, and whether it's us or even Brian bringing opportunities, you know, to us at 76 Capital, when you bring together the athlete and the entrepreneur, there's this kind of magic that happens. And one of the things that Brian loves to talk about is that the fact that you have similar kinds of traits and basically personality traits are similar to being a top athlete, are very, very similar to being a top business person or entrepreneur, whether that's perseverance or being able to have that drive or desire or passion to go make things happen. You know, this the persistence, again, that, you know, this thing we mentioned earlier about getting knocked down and then just getting back up. Have you seen those types of things in the types of businesses that you've been involved with? And are those some of the things that you're excited about getting involved with the companies that we have at 76 Capital?
Yeah, absolutely. I think obviously perseverance is a big part of it. I think resilience as well. You know, I think as an entrepreneur in a startup, you know, there could be so many times where you turn down for funding from various sources, right? And it might be a lot of negative and things like that, but it's important that you remain resilient and you persevere. You try to persevere, keep going and keep trying and keep pushing forward. And I think that's something that drives me as an athlete now, even as an older player now. You know, I always say like the next youth player coming up is here to take your spot. Well, they better earn it, right? Like I'm going to keep fighting for that in my spot, right? And it's the same thing as a business owner, as an entrepreneur. You got to keep that drive going. And I think as now as I try to get ready to prepare myself for life after soccer, that's what I see in business and, you know, kind of in the VC world. It's that spark, you know, what keeps me when I wake up in the morning, what keeps me going right now is obviously my drive is to keep performing at a very high level. But also with the business world, I see, you know, in the different businesses that I'm involved with, it's that spark where like I have to wake up, look in my emails and whatever it is whether it's good or bad news in the morning, like I got to persevere for the day and I got to turn that negative into a positive. Or, you know, if I get another, you know, I'm on the advisory board of Athlon, a new company. And it's just kind of, you know, you get turned down from certain funding opportunities, but it's okay. Listen, I got this other guy. I got this other company. Let's get to them and let's you know, give them our deck and let's pitch it to them and, you know, we can make it happen. And you find out your true character. You know, you find out what you're all about and who's really willing to come with you and down in the trenches, right, so to speak. So I think there's a lot of similarities, a lot of parallels. From the business and the sports world, you know, I can think about it. Maybe I don't know if it will make sense, but I think about it like in the soccer world. You know, I think the soccer world is so different in the way the transfers work, the way guys are go from team to team, and how much some clubs are willing to pay for some players. You know, and I think about it as a soccer player. Like, let's take Brendan Aaronson last year for an example from the Philadelphia Union. you know, if you look at him as like a company, as a startup, like he signs, you know, with the youth academy, he's in the academy, you know, you get different, like, I guess, seed funding as he grows up through the academy. And then all of a sudden he signs that first team contract. That's like the Series A, and you're trying to get him to all these different verticals, working on his technical part of the game, working on his tactical awareness. Those are like the different verticals. And all of a sudden there's a possibility for an exit as he gets the Series B funding and whatever it is. And boom, he exits. You know, you get that exit when he gets transferred to a big club, you know, for $12 million, you know, I guess on a smaller scale, obviously, but that's how kind of I see, you know, and with that soccer mind and business mind, you know, that connectivity. But there's definitely a lot of parallels to be drawn from, and, you know, in the athlete's world to business.
No doubt. I mean, when you think about, you know, your career so far, and as we start to, you know, wind down our 76 Capital Leadership Series show here and kind of coming to the end of what we're doing here, you know, this show, but, you know, we think about your career so far, you know, is there one moment or is there something that you're most proud of that you've done so far? Or is there, or maybe it's something that you really are looking, you know, you hope to be able to do in the future. What do you kind of think about right now as that?
Oh yeah, that's a good question. I think obviously, you know, the birth of my two kids changed everything, you know, a new family man. But I think meeting my wife, you know, she's from Norway, Norwegian, like I said earlier, I mentioned that living in Europe, being in Europe really changed my perspective on a lot of things. It allowed me to come out of the USA and see a lot of things for different ways, different reasons, different ways of living. So for me, I still have never lost that drive. You know, I have that competitive edge, that willingness to persevere, that resilience that I think is very much needed in the business world as well. But having my kids, I think, has even strengthened that to a certain level, right? Because I want to allow my kids to live an even better life than I did. So I think that drive is even further entrenched in me to help others. And I think I got to thank my wife for that, because she's got a much bigger heart than I do, always willing to help others. And I think that's where that drive comes in, where I love to be a part of those entrepreneurs and those working with the right people that are building those kind of companies that are going to be transformational. And in doing that, I'm able to help other people out, but also obviously we're all in here to make money as well. That's what you do as a VC, that I can help further you know, my kids' life and their lifestyles and things like that. So that's something that I think about often.
Well, I'm excited that we'll get a chance to think about these things together. As you are now, you know, our co-chairman of our 76 Capital Athlete Venture Group, again, working, you know, hand in hand with Brian Westbrook and my partner, Chad Stender. It's going to be really exciting for you and for all of us to work together, try to build these next generation businesses, work with entrepreneurs, help them achieve their goals. As we like to say at 76 Capital, you know, make the impossible possible. And really just do some incredible things together. So, Ali, it's been great having you as a guest on our 76 Capital Leadership Series. As I mentioned earlier, definitely follow Ali Bedoya 17 on Twitter. And, you know, hit up Ali, hit up us at 76 Capital. Because if you're an entrepreneur, an athlete, a student, a business person, you know, you want to work in this amazing new sports tech world, whether it's in the sports betting world, esports world, or just, you know, something new within the sports world. Look what's happened within the media world with the NFL, this $100+ billion deal. I mean, this industry is white hot, and we want to talk with you if you really have an idea or you want to even, you know, work for one of the companies that we're involved with. Please reach out to us and we'd love to connect with you. So again, Ali, thank you so much for joining us on our show.
Wayne, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. And, you know, I look forward to being able to hopefully come in the office soon when this pandemic is over and interact more. But I'm looking forward to, you know, thank you guys for including me as part of the ABG co-chairman. And I'm really looking forward to everything we've got going on.
Absolutely. So once again, I'm Wayne Kimmel. And again, thanks for tuning in for this edition of our 76 Capital Leadership Series. And as Ali would say, get out there and go make it happen.
Yes, sir.
In Philadelphia, reputation is key. No one knows that better than rushordertees.com. Rush Order Tees has proudly printed high-quality custom apparel in Philly since they started in 2002. They take printing as seriously as their love for Philly sports, cheesesteaks, and that statue outside the art museum. No matter the order size or deadline, Rush Order Tees has you covered. Start your design today online or give them a call at 1-800-620-1233. RushOrderTees.com, Philadelphia's home for custom apparel.